Okay, so we should be ready. I haven't been here in a while, but now for the most of the rest of the semester, I will be the one that go through the database course. Where are we? We are here. I don't know if Dipti is using this kind of rundown, but it's quite a long time since we started. Been through most of the what we need to develop database applications. So I started going through the development, setting up the environment, talking about database testing. And then Dipti went through SQL for querying the database, and you went through the data modeling. I don't know, did you talk so much about NoSQL? I guess not. A little bit? Yeah. We'll cover it a little bit again next week, I think, towards the end of next week, because this part where we talk about XML and, for the next 2, 3 weeks, XML is very different from relational data. What we have been doing here is very much focusing on relational data. So it's all into tables and foreign keys and primary keys and whatever we need to have a consistent database. Now, XML is, we are going back to the kind of the history, because if you remember from the very beginning, I talked about the early database systems. And we talked about hierarchical database systems and network database systems. And these database systems are coming back. So now we have hierarchical database systems, and XML is a hierarchical database. So in the algorithmic course, you do cover have covered trees already, I guess, tree traversals, and also networks. This is kind of where we are back now, especially the tree structure and tree traversal and query languages for querying tree structured data. Any of you heard about MongoDB? Yeah, so MongoDB, we'll talk a little bit about it. MongoDB is also a tree structured database. It's called a document database. But a document, if you can think of a document, what is a document? Well, it contains chapters, chapter contains sections, section contains subsections. So it's also a tree structure. So that's why XML is relevant in the database course, and you will see quite a lot of XML technologies out there that is going to be useful. And to me, it's kind of good as well that we're going to tie up the ends. So we're going to go a little bit back to where we started a little bit using the browser and HTML, and now we're going to use the same technology again. With Dipti, you have used some other technologies for modeling database and for both conceptual and the logical model. But now we're going to be a little bit more on the web technologies. Before going ahead, so how are we doing? Are we doing okay? Is it starting getting too much? Overwhelming all the everything you're supposed to deal with. And I since the last assignment was extended, I understand that there's quite a lot to do on the assignments. But hopefully you get through. Anything general, any feedback you have, any opinions, thoughts? We have had meetings with the reference group, so kind of we have a little bit of feedback from there, but anything? No one is really too upset. It's got, the database course is hard, not because there are so many difficult concepts, like in the algorithm course. That's hard because all these algorithms are hard to understand and get through. And database is different. It's just so much that we need to deal with. And it's hard to understand without getting the hands-on experience. Assignment 5 is out. I think the deadline for assignment 4 is today. So that's because of that, I didn't release assignment 5 yet, but it was released today. The assignment is, we can have a look. I think we have time for that. Let's do this. I think it should be... what we're going to be doing is looking at XPath and what's called the DOM, Document Object Model, which is an API for accessing XML data, hierarchical data. So that's in PHP. There is a DOM API that we could use. So we are back to PHP. We are back to PHP programming. And but the first part is XPath. It's similar purpose as SQL, meaning that it's a query language for identifying nodes in an XML document. I don't know if you remember, but we used something, a different query language when I was here before Deputy took over. Do you remember what we used for testing, for acceptance testing? We need to know nodes in the tree. We used CSS selectors. So we needed to select nodes based on CSS. Now, I was saying at that time that we're going to come back to XPath to have another query language for finding nodes in a tree structure. And that's what we're going to be doing. Going to start, think today, but then continuing tomorrow and finalizing it on Friday. So similarly to the first assignment, there are two tasks. The first task is to practice XPath. So it's similar to the SQL assignment. There is a number, there is a document you'll find. So there's a repo containing an XML document. You download the repo, or you fork it and download your copy of it. And then you try to make these queries. And I have feedback from last year is that I do say how many you're supposed to get. And then you need to make adjustments to your query to make sure that you do get these number of results. In the second part, that's where we're going to use DOM, and we won't be starting DOM. Maybe we'll start it at the end of Friday, but most likely we're going to start DOM next week. So the DOM part, if you would like to start the assignment, that part of the assignment, you will need to read up a little bit on your own going through the DOM API in PHP. Otherwise, we're going to be doing most of this on next week on Wednesday. And there is some testing. So if you didn't install Codeception in assignment 1, or if you uninstalled it, you need to reinstall it again. Codeception, if you remember, you need to set up Codeception for each project. So after you download the repo, then you need, if you didn't haven't Composer installed, you need to do that. Otherwise, you need to go to the root of the repo again, and you need to set up Codeception and bootstrap it. And we're only going to be doing unit testing this time. So then that's the only test. You don't need to worry about acceptance testing. There's no user interface to this project. You're just going to write code to get data from an XML document. So there's just unit testing. Is that scary? Going back to Codeception? It's okay. Okay, good. Anyone here that didn't do any Codeception work in the first assignment? You all did. Was it a did you get to see the benefit? Who thought the unit testing was useful in the first assignment? Okay, that's not even half. I hope after this it's going to be better, because in this case There is no, I don't ask you to write the code, a controller, and a view to show the content. You're just going to have the model that is containing the data. So that's the best way to do this, is to actually do the unit test. So in the repo, you have tests, and you have some unit tests that you need to run. And as before, let me see if I have the file here. So there is a test stub. So this is what you get when you download. You have source, model. You have some classes that return. So what is the XML file is containing is some skiing clubs and some skiers. And some of these skiers have been skiing for some of these clubs over the years. And the skiers are logging each of their skiing practice session. So we have a log of every practice session. So what you're going to do is to write this script that will, from the XML file, find all the clubs that are listed and all the skiers, and find the skier information, and eventually find in what years they were affiliated with the various clubs and how much they skied every season. And if you go here to test stubs, I created as a stub similar to what I did in the first assignment, because when you use Codeception, you're going to get your own test directory and unit subdirectory, and that's where you're going to supposed to have the test. So this stub file, you just put it there, as described in the lecture. And if you look at the test file, it is as we had it in the first assignment. Some tests are already there. So this one is test for seeing that you can load the clubs from the XML file. This test that you can load basic skier information. This one is testing that you properly deal with the affiliation history. And the last two are not implemented. So these two you need to implement. And the comment suggests how you could implement them. And this goes to the yearly distance, meaning how much did they ski in total for a season? Because the log has each individual entry, and you need to sum them up and say, for this season, they ski this much. For this season, they ski this much. So that's your task. And here, write up the test code first, so that you could test for these two skiers that I have suggested here. And then you should be able to go through developing the code and see that it actually does what it's supposed to do. I do suggest a couple of hints. The first few hints relate to how you could work to make it into small chunks, and you test one chunk at a time rather than working, and none of the tests work. So start getting the clubs, continue getting the basic skiing information or skier information, then look at the affiliation history, and finally work on the harder part, which is to sum up all the individual kilometers into yearly totals or season totals. I hope with this and today I haven't given this to the TAs yet, because I think today is still going to be focusing on we're going to focus on those who would like to submit assignment 4. But then from tomorrow and on, we will give you help on this as well, getting it all up and running if you need to. Okay, I hope that's that will help you. Getting started with the assignment. So, XML. How many know XML from before? A few of you. But all of you now at least have experience with HTML. And XML and HTML, there are some similarities. We'll talk about it in a second. So what the XML contains, as HTML does, is that we talk about building blocks like elements and attributes, and we have some other in that we haven't talked about in the HTML case, like commands and processing instructions. We have entity references. You remember that we couldn't use the and the less than sign, so we have to use an entity reference. So we talk a little bit about those, and then we'll talk about structural constraints. Structural constraints, this is similar to in the database, where we like to have foreign keys and primary keys to maintain the consistency of the database. So in XML, we have two levels. We're going to come back to this next week. But one level is well-formed. So we have some requirements when it comes to an XML document to be well-formed, so that parsers and all our tools that process XML can understand or correctly parse the information. But these are very strict requirements, and if the well-formedness is, or if the document isn't well-formed, the parser would just stop processing. They won't even try to recover from it. They just stop, and you have to fix it. And then we talk about valid XML. And valid has to do with the schema. So yes, even in XML case, we have schemas, not just in the database. So next week, we're going to talk about XML schemas, and we talk about valid XML documents. And valid means that it follows the rules of the schema. Well-formed is totally independent from schema. All documents need to be well-formed. In addition, if we have an HTML document, or if we have an SVG document, or if we have some other special XML application document, then we can also verify that it is a proper structure. So, why do we want XML? What do you think this is? Let's say you find an old file. So in last year's programming course, you did program files, and you store data on files, and you had a program, and you retrieve the files, and you process them, didn't you? I think you all did some file operations, yes. So this, let's say you find a file, .dat, and you find these lines of this. Many, 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 many records with this structure. What is this? Anyone having an idea? You are too young, but anyway, it could work. Yeah? It's a floppy disk, exactly. It's actually a box of 10 floppy disks. So if I have XML, it could look this way. So I could say, okay, I have a product and the barcode. So the first number here is the barcode or product code. The manufacturer, so this is the manufacturer. What is the name? It's the Data Life MF double density floppy disk. How many in the box? 10. What's the size? It's 3.5 inches. Those are the typical ones that we used before we started going all into CDs and now USBs. And the color was black. You could find them. This was plastic covered, so you can have them blue and white and black. So this is basically a box. So a kind of redundant question. Which one is easier to interpret? Yeah, XML, because it's self-documenting. You don't only get the data, but it's also documented. So for this one, you would need the program to know the structure. For this one, you will need the program and the human user to be able to recognize what is quantity mean, what does size mean, what does color mean. If you do, then we can interpret the content without further guesses. That's how it looked like. They were black inside the box. So, some of the arguments, and we're going to come back to this later on, either on Friday or next week, but when XML was suggested, they said that, okay, it should have a simple structure, simple syntax, so that you can easily parse it, being a computer, and a human user can also read it. It's not a binary, because then the human wouldn't read it, but it's not just free text either, so that the computer couldn't read it. It's something in between. it's structured and simple syntax, so both humans and computers can read it. It's self-documented, as we could see. Of course, we need to be able to understand some of it, but at least there are tags that are semantic, saying what this content is, and it is easier than to interpret. It has support for hierarchical structures, and that is important. You have now been working on relational databases. Relational databases are flat, so you have to have these foreign keys everywhere to refer. When human beings deal with a complex world, we tend to organize things into hierarchies. And making hierarchies on your file system, it's not the flat record-based relational database file structure. You have directories. You have all your schoolwork here, you have your hobbies there, and under your schoolwork you have the various courses, and under various courses you have the assignments, and you have whatever. So you structure into hierarchies. And XML is supporting that way of thinking. Debugging is simple. Yeah, well, everything is relative. But at least you can divide the debugging into stages. So you can do one step would be to say, okay, is it well-formed? If it's well-formed, then we know that already the structure is sound. And then we can go into validity and question. Camera zoom? I can't do anything with the camera, I think. Yeah, I didn't even know there was a zoom. I thought it would... Okay, sorry. I'm here or there. I don't know. Somewhere. We could try to look at it later on. Yeah, so debugging is... maybe it's easier when I face the camera. I don't know. Debugging is easier. It would be both for the user. We can see whether it looks reasonable, the content, because you have this structure view, and you have tools. I'm going to show you Chrome or the browser tools, in which you can, in the structure, you can collapse branches, and you can get an overview, and you can open, and you can go into various branches quickly and nicely. And for a machine, and that is what we're going to look at in the final assignment, use the schema, because when we read the file, I don't know how much of your project last year in dealing with files, how much of the code was dealing with the fact that the data you got from the file may not be properly structured. So you have to deal with, okay, if that's not there, if it's there, if that's not the correct data type, what do you do? But in this case, then we can leave that to the validators, to the XML tools, because we have well-formed, we have a schema, and then we have the content. And validation means that we can, in the application program, we can assume that the content is as described in the schema. We don't have to worry about whether it's well-formed, whether it is invalid in terms of related to the schema. So we can leave much of the testing, code testing and debugging, to other tools in the chain. I will talk about that in next week. It's language and platform independent because it's just plain text, so you don't have to worry about binary encoding. And you have APIs in... We're going to use the PHP API, there's a JavaScript API, there's a Java API, there's a Python API, or multiple of them. So in any programming language, there is DOM APIs. And we'll talk about the DOM API next week. And there are plenty of tools you could use for authoring, for verification, for validation, for querying. So it has a nice tool set. As developers, we can just use them. We don't have to make huge libraries on our own. And there are... growing library of what's called a standard format, meaning XML applications for specific purposes. So you have an XML standard. I was looking the other day at there is an open travel XML format. So if travel companies, they need to share. So you have in traveling, you have hotels, you have the airlines, the train lines, you have rental car companies, you have events, I mean, everything. And when you make a travel, or you will like to go traveling, you need to get and exchange data with all of these service providers, potentially. So then it's useful to have a shared common XML structure. So whatever you get from somewhere can be added to that big travel itinerary that you have. So this is kind of the purpose here, is to try to develop standard formats that everybody agrees upon and can use, and then we can share data. So what's the difference between XML and HTML? You could say that HTML is a specific application. It's for hypertext documents. XML is for any application. It could be hypertext. It could be vector graphics. It could be semantic web. It could be any application. HTML is just hypertext markup, one specific application. So XML is a standard way of generating markup languages. Among others, it could be XHTML. So at some point, there was some view that HTML would be replaced by XHTML, which would be built on top of XML. That's not the case. They reverted and went back to HTML5 because it was too complex and it broke with everything. It's not too complex, but it broke everything that we had from before. So all old documents would not work. HTML does not build on XML. So now we have HTML5, which is not XML-based, but you can also find XHTML. But XML is a general tree structure that can be used for HTML trees, but also for other trees. So some examples of XML applications. You have markup for mathematical expressions, for vector graphics, for 3D worlds, for synchronized multimedia presentations, for books, formatted books. In MPEG, you find XML for MPEG metadata. You have a Dublin Core, which is a standard for marking up any object that is being created. You have XMP, which is part of the image libraries and image files. In programming, configuration files is quite often expressed in XML. SOAP, WSDL, BPL is web-based services for specifying services, for exchanging data between services using web application or web technologies. And then XML is kind of the encoding, the way to encode it. In geographical information, maps and geographical markup, semantic web, you have semantics encoded in RDF or OWL. These are XML types. So XML is being used in the web as the basic building block for any markup that you would like to express on top of the web. So what is it? We've seen it before, as I said. When we look at HTML, it's similar to in HTML. We have elements and attributes. We also have an XML declaration, which is how the web browser, for instance, recognizes that this is an XML file and not an HTML file, is that you include the XML declaration. But there is more. You have text. We've seen that in HTML as well. You have entity and entity references. And then you have some namespaces, which you may use in HTML, but it's not so common. But here in HTML, namespaces are very important. And you have processing instructions. Processing instructions will be the question mark PHP that we have been used already for PHP script. It says this is something that we send to the processor, in this case the PHP processor, for processing. There are ways to have commands and see data. These three ones, we're not going to talk too much about them. I talked a little bit about the first ones. The document declaration. Here we may indicate what XML version. I don't think it's ever moved beyond version 1. It's still version 1, but could potentially be future versions. The encoding. You remember that we had UTF-8 as an encoding. That's the standard in XML. but you may encode the text in different encoding schemes, like the ISO Latin 1, the Western European ISO encoding, or other language or other encodings. And you have DTD as a way to validate, and we talk about validation next week, so it's not so much to worry about. But here is a typical example. It says the declaration is question mark XML, like you have question mark PHP for a processing instruction, XML, and then the version, the encoding, in this case it was ISO 88591, which is the Western European language, and then it's standalone. We don't have to say standalone, we don't have to say encoding, because that's implicit. These are kind of default values, we don't really need them. It's quite common, though, to have version 1 listed there. Elements. They are the basic three building blocks. You remember that we in HTML, we have HTML. What is the children of HTML? Well, we can have a head tag or element, and we have a body element. What would be the children of body? Well, you can have headers and paragraphs and lists, and in a paragraph you can have spans, and you can have various content. We talk about different types of content that an element may contain. It may be empty. We remember the break element in HTML, br, is empty, doesn't have anything. It's just saying that, okay, this is here, you have a new line. It may have simple content. What does that mean? Simple content means that it just contains text. The text can be a date, or it can be a number, it can be a float, it could be pure text, whatever, but it doesn't have any markup in it. Complex content means that it contains elements, like HTML element contain a head and a body element. Head may contain a title, may contain some meta elements. So complex means that it contains elements, or it has attributes as well. We'll talk about that next week when we talk about validation. And it may be mixed. What does mixed mean? Suggestions? Multiple elements, you could say, would be, it could still be complex, because it has, by nature, it defines a tree. I'm not sure if I understood. So the question whether you could combine various lists, is that what you suggest? I don't know if I can repeat that. The question is whether you're all in the same level, you mean?
Yeah.
It is related to levels. So if you think about HTML being elements and text, so if you have, think of a body. What does a body of an HTML contain, or a paragraph? Paragraph. It may contain some text, and then it has a span. A span is an element. Text is text. Span is element, then it has some text, and then it has some span again. So it's a mix of text and elements. So it's kind of different levels, because typically we think of text maybe at the leaf nodes, but in this case, an intermediate node has children. Some of them are elements, some of them contain text or text nodes. So this is an empty element, doesn't have any children. Why do I have a slash here in the end? I don't know if you've seen that before, because in HTML you will have break and then slash end break. Question, answer? Yes. This is to say that the tag, it starts here and it ends here. Because in HTML we need an end tag for all tags. So we could write start tag, nothing in between, end tag, that's also empty. But in this case, if it's empty, we can just put in the slash at the end, saying it starts here and it stops here. simple content, this case, the title, web page for, and complex content, you have HTML, body, div, p, this one has simple content, this one has complex content, this one has complex content, this has complex content. The p does not. And the mixed, we have some strong, which is a child element, and this will be the text, which is some text children. So, what would this tree look like? If we, so we have title, web page 4. How is the tree, how would the tree look like? So, we have here title, and which are the children to title? Let's see. Here is the web and some text. So it's a very simple tree. It has an element, and that element has one child, which happened to be text. So this is element, and this is text. Both are nodes in an XML structure. How would this look like? So we have HTML, body, div. Oops, sorry, the typo here. Div, the end tag there. It's not so good because that would fail. It's not, it doesn't. It should match the div tag. So sorry for that. I used this one last year. I didn't notice. So HTML, body, div, p. So if you go back to the tree, then we have what does the tree look like? We have HTML, we have body, we have p, and we have the text. HTML, body, p, and then whatever text we had. Again, not very... Oh, there was a div in between. Sorry, I forgot the div. So it's a deep tree, but doesn't have many branches. Now, this paragraph, that's strong, no, you can't do that. How many children would P have here? You think so? So let's take all this, let's say. So this was the P. So if you go back, what's the first content? Well, this is a tricky one. The first content is, it's actually some blanks here. So the first content is a text node, which is just blank. And then what is the second content? That was the strong. Let's just put dot 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 here for text. It was blank, so it doesn't. It's not much. And the second one was the strong. And the strong had a child with some text. And then we had some text again. If you go back, what's after strong? Well, there is some text, and then there is an M. So we text, and then we have M, and M has some text here as well. So let's do dot, dot, dot for the text. And the final one, does it have any more? Yeah, there's an exclamation mark at the end. So it also has some that's actually the tree. It has five children because it had some text before and after, and you had two elements with text in between, and then these have one child each. And the break, very easy. It's just a node itself. So we see that all these XML documents, they map to trees, where the nodes of the tree would be elements and text. Now, when we move into attributes, it's not a tree anymore. It becomes a graph, but let's talk about that later. So, in attribute, we can put extra information about elements. So in this image, for instance, we say that this image is 240 pixels high, 320 pixels wide, and this is the file storing the image data. In this case, we need to have the values enclosed by apostrophes. So the attribute values will have to be double quotes or single quotes. There is no difference in between double quotes and single quotes. We can use them. And you remember in PHP, there's a little bit difference between double and single quotes, but in XML, there is no. Question? This can be XML, absolutely. But it's also HTML. In this case, I have some HTML examples. But this could be elements in an XML file. So if this was XHTML, which is the XML implementation of HTML, this could very well be the elements. Yes. But typically in XML, we would design our own elements. I'm just using some HTML examples here because these will also be valid in an XML document. But in general, you can have other types here. I'll show you the SVG version in a short while. But of course, if you start with a double, you can't end with a single. And if you start with a single, you can't end with a double. They need to be matched. That brings us to well-formedness that we're going to do before the break. What does well-formed mean? Well-formed means that the first requirement is that an XML document needs to have one and only one root. Why don't we allow multiple roots? What would we have then if we had multiple roots? Yes. We have a forest. We will have graphs eventually anyway. I'm sorry about that. We will have graphs. But it will be a forest. If you have many roots, there will be many trees. Many trees is a forest. So since XML is a tree structure, it needs to have one root element. So if you try to have a document with multiple roots, the parser would fail. It would say, nope, it doesn't have a root element. You need to have correct nesting, which means that a child needs to be completely within its parents. So you can't end the parent before the children are ended. You understand that? So when you open a tag, you need to close that tag before the parent tag can close. All elements need to have an explicit end. As we said, if it's empty, we can just say it starts and stops here. Names are case sensitive. If you're used to HTML, that's one of the differences. In HTML, the element names are case insensitive. So you can write HTML uppercase or lowercase. It means the same thing. Not so in XML. In XML, it's difference between uppercases and lowercases. So you have to do exact the casing that you had. And this is going to cause you some problem when you do XPath, because if you type in a lowercase s where it should be an uppercase, it's not going to return anything because it doesn't find it, most likely, unless you have something else with a lowercase instead. So we have to be very careful about the casing. Attributes, they need to have a value. If you define an attribute, it also needs to have a value. That's not the case in HTML. In HTML, we can say, just say checked as an attribute. You don't have to say checked a leak checked or checked a leak true. You can just say checked without a value. But in HTML or XML, sorry, we need a value for all the attributes. And an attribute can't be repeated. If you have an attribute, it can be only one. So you can't have an attribute where you have the ID several places or the name or the height or anything for several places. We can have an attribute only one. But the attribute may contain multiple values. We'll talk about that next week. And we can't put comments inside tags, meaning between the start and end tag. Or we can't put in comments in there. Comments have to be in between the tags. And no less than signs or ampersands. You remember we did talk about this before. Why can't we use this one? Because it will tell the XML that this is the start of an element. But it's not the start of an element, it's a less than sign. So we need to use an entity reference. You remember we had the LT, less than, ampersand LT. And since we use the ampersand to indicate that this is an entity character entity reference, then we can't use ampersand either. So ampersand, if we want an ampersand in the text, we need to do ampersand amp semicolon to refer to the text character, the ampersand. Okay, let's take a break there, and then we can go through a well-formed look at some well-formedness after the break. Okay, so let's have a look at this one. I ask for 5 errors, well-formed errors. This one will not be accepted by any parser. There are errors. Yeah, suggestion.
Capital form.
So here there's different capitals, and this one is trying to end something that's not started, because this form is for capital. Yeah, next one. Yeah, it's starting, but it's not ended. If that's what you mean, the break. Yeah, because you need an end tag. Question back there? Or the check does not have. It's the check is an attribute. Input. So it continues. So input type, name, value. Checked is an attribute. It doesn't have a value. So it should have. This was okay in HTML. So it just checked. But in XML, it needs to say checked equals some value. And typically, say checked equals checked. It looks a bit strange, but that's what they have to do.
The input tag does not end.
The input tags don't have endings either. It starts here, starts there, but they don't end. That's right. So those that adds up to the 5. So we need to close tags. We need to have consistency between the start and the casing, and attributes need values. There could be many more problems, but these were the 5 that were here. That's right. Good. Now comes something that is kind of unfortunate somehow that we need to worry so much about it, but there are for attributes and for elements, they need to be valid XML names. We need to understand what an XML name. And if we have an ID, we'll talk about DTDs next week, and if you define something to be a unique ID, an ID will also have to be a valid XML name. And XML names has some restrictions to what can be XML names. So these are the rules. You can only start with underscore or a regular letter. A to Z or national letters. But it has to be classified not as a special sign, not as a digit. It has to be underscore or some valid letter. It can be followed by numbers, letters, underscore, dashes, or dots. Other special characters can't be used. And we can never have XML as a prefix. In any casing, XML, any combination of upper and lowercase, can never be in the beginning, because that's what the web standardization body would like to preserve for future use. They may want to use the XML something for something in the future, and they don't want that to break any user code. So because of that, XML in any form as a prefix is invalid. Now, are these acceptable names? Is this an okay name? Why no? It's a letter. It's any letter. So it's classified as a letter. It's okay. It's not the best one, because if you don't have a Norwegian keyboard, you could probably not type it. But it is legal. Yes, it is. No, because it would say that this is an attribute, and this attribute doesn't have a value. So it couldn't be, because spaces are used to separate tag names from the attributes. Sorry? One is okay there. It can be inside. You can just start with it. It could be inside. So this one is valid. You can start with underscore. Ones are okay there. Dots are okay there. So this one is okay. What about this character? Is it listed here? No. So this is an invalid character. Can't use that one. And this one is very, yeah, you can't have a digit there. Can't start with a number. Yeah. So when you design attribute names, element names, and ID values, where you have the ID of an element, can never break these rules. It has to be an XML name. Yeah, okay, XML demo. It starts with XML, so it can't be used either. Entities, entity references. As I said, we can't use less than. We do ampersand LT. We can't do amp, as we use amp. These ones are also defined in XML. The greater than, the double quote, and the single quote or apostrophe. These five are defined in XML. No one else. So if you remember in HTML, you have many more. So in HTML, we have the Norwegian æ, the ø, the å, and they have entity names in HTML, but that's defined in HTML, not in XML. And but we can refer to anything that has a Unicode code by having the hex value of the Unicode value of the character, and then it will be printed. So we can use entity references like that in the text of an XML document. Namespaces. We talked a little bit about namespace before in terms of PHP. Namespaces are kind of important in XML because, as with PHP, if you like to combine different XML documents, they may have titles, maybe an HTML title, but it also may also be the title of a person. You would like to handle the title of a person different from the title of the document. So because of that, you would like to have a possibility to say this is the HTML title, or this is the friend of a friend, or whatever XML standard you're using. Now, in XML, or typical way to define namespace is to define it using XML and S. Here you can see that XML prefix. It's okay because it's defined by the XML standards body. So they have XML NS, which means that this is an XML namespace, and this is the namespace. The URI, or the identity of namespace, is this HTTP URL, and the DC is what we call the prefix. So later on in the document, if you would like to refer to it, we don't have to have this full long name. We could use the short name, which is just DC, when we talk about this namespace. And the scope is then in the subtree. So here, for instance, if I use, this is RDF, so if I use RDF description, then we say that the DC is a Dublin Core namespace. So here, it's the title, Dublin Core title. This is the Dublin Core creator. This is the Dublin Core creator. This is Dublin Core date. So date here is the date defined by Dublin Core, not whatever format that we are using, XML document format we are using right now. We could also, rather than DC title, we could add this whole long string, because that is really the URI. That's really the identity of the namespace. So the DC is just a short name we use for convenience in this document. The scope is the subtree. So here, if you have a book collection, we have an owner, we have a book. Sorry, that example is in Norwegian. And then we have a description of the book. And the description, here in the description, we can use the Dublin Core title, Dublin Core creator, creator, Dublin Core date. Because Dublin Core is defined and valid for the whole subtree, starting with the description as the parent. So, the prefix. We are free to define whatever prefix when we create this document. Because what is important is what it's bound to. So when we talk about namespace and names that are in namespace, we have two parts. One is the prefix. The prefix is the one that is bound to the namespace. And the other part is the local part, what we call the local part, just the creator. It's the local part. And as I said, the prefix needs to be an XML name again. So here we go with those rules. So it had to be a valid XML name, starting with the character or with letter or with an underscore, and the rules that we just exercised. But what is more important is what is really the other part, what it binds to. Because we have typically a uniform resource identifier. We talked about URLs. This is where we find stuff. URL is the location of documents, of videos, of images, of reports, whatever. What is a URI? A URI is an identifier that we assume, we have to assume is unique. So when we refer to, here for instance, when we refer to this URI, it can be only one of those, and it defines the Dublin core uniquely. We can't refer to two vocabularies or two standards. This is the Dublin core standard reference. So when we use this one, everybody recognizing this would know that, okay, now we're talking about Dublin core, because we know this URI. We know this is the URI of Dublin core, Dublin core elements 1.1. And when we see that URI, we know that this is referring to Dublin core. So if we want to understand and recognize Dublin core, we just have to remember that URI. Whether it's called DC or Dublin or core or whatever as a prefix, we don't care, because that's just local to the document. So the URI has to be unique. So if you create your own, it's a good idea to make sure that it is within your, what you say, authority. So let's say if you have NTNUNO and then student and then your student number, that number is not going to be reused anyway. So that's kind of your domain, your property. And if you have a web server or a domain, anything you create in a domain is yours. No one else will be able to use that domain. So you can create a URI within your domain. So anything where you have authority, they're sure that nobody else is going to mess up by trying to redefine the URI. The URI doesn't have to be a document. So if you have this Dublin core, you don't have to put anything there, because it's just a URI. The identity is an important thing. But it's a good practice, because if you find a URI and you wonder, what does this mean? Then it would be a good thing if you could just type it in a browser and the namespace is defined. So it's good practice to make sure that behind the URIs, there are documents specifying the namespace. Because that would be helpful to whoever wonder what this is namespace is about. You just type in namespace in the browser, and it will document namespace. But it's not required. What's important here is that it is unique, so that when those who develop applications for certain namespaces can just worry about recognizing the URI. And then they know that, okay, this is Dublin core. I can see it from the namespace. And then you have the possibility of having default namespace. So here, in the SVG example, we say that, okay, the default namespace is the SVG namespace. And then we don't have to repeat that this is in the namespace, this is in the namespace, these are all in the namespace. Because when we say default, it means that all those are in the namespace. So this means that this is not a stop element. This is a SVG stop element. And the SVG stop element is different from a global stop element. So we have to say that, okay, it has to be within the SVG namespace, and it is the stop. So this is an SVG offset attribute. This is an SVG X1 attribute. Everything here, if you don't specify any other namespace here, they are all in the SVG namespace. You don't have to repeat it for every element, every attribute. If you were to combine, add some other, then you would have to prefix the other ones with whatever namespace they're from. Yeah,
web browser, if we open an XML file, then it will display it as a tree structure, unless it's a recognized vocabulary. If it's SVG, for instance, the browser will show you the graphics because it recognizes SVG. But if you have an XML and it doesn't have a namespace that is recognized by the browser, it will just show the tree. And if you don't have a style sheet, I mean, if you have a style sheet, it will tell the browser to style differently. But we'll come back to that. So if, for instance, I have this, not here, I have going to be using some example files when we talk about XPath. And let's see, it's far up here. Let's see, where did I put this? Yeah, you could take this this gear logs, the file that you are going to be so this is how the XML file is going to open. So this is the file you're going to be using in the assignment 5. It opens, and here there is a I could include a style sheet. We'll talk a little bit about the transformation, XSL transformations. For now, we'll leave it. But if there's no style sheet, it will show up here. And it's a tree structure, which means that I can collapse the clubs, the skiers, the season, this way. The browser does give me a tree structure support. And I can open the clubs, and I can close just to see what are the clubs. And I can try the same with the skiers, but unfortunately, there are quite a few skiers. But I can do things like this. Oh, this is a smaller one than the one you get. This is a smaller version made specially for this purpose. So I can collapse the log and then just look at the skier, the club, and the username. So this way I can look at the XML structure inside a browser and traverse it. And we'll look at XPath in just very shortly. So this is a good tool to use for XML. Now, the XML tutorial, I don't know why the XPath tutorial came up here, but that's going to come next. The W3 Schools XML tutorial and this document, really, really good introduction to XML, will give you the things we talked about today will be there, because it's not so much in the textbook. The textbook has a couple of pages talking about all of this in XML, and not enough detail. So these two will be the references, the XML tutorial here and the introduction to XML here. Because what we'll want to do in the rest of this lecture is to start looking into XPath, so that we can jumpstart a little bit what we're going to do tomorrow. XPath. Let's just skip the beginning. A little bit about the motivation for XPath. And we'll talk about location paths. What we're going to start is going through what we call the abbreviated paths. Just going through them. And then we'll look at the unabbreviated ones at the very end of the XPath. But we can do most of what we need to do, we do with the abbreviated ones. We start there, and we'll talk a little bit about context, node tests, attributes, and then we'll work through quite a number of examples of how to query, how to put in predicates into the path. So what is XPath and why is it so important? Well, XPath is a notation for addressing parts of an XML document. So we can say, we can refer specifically to a certain part of a document. Let's say all nodes of a certain type or all attributes or anything. And why do we want to do that? Well, if you look next week, we're going to talk about XML schema. In schema, we would like to define uniqueness and scope, for instance. We may want to define keys key references, like you have in a database. You have primary keys and you have foreign keys. The same thing in XML. You can have keys and key references. And then you need to say, what are the elements or attributes that are primary keys? What are the attributes or elements that are foreign keys? And where do they refer to? In XSLT and XQuery, we have some pattern matchers saying that, okay, nodes of this pattern should be transformed this way or should be retrieved this way. We have relations in XLink and XPointer, are ways to link various nodes together. And in application programs, we can see that in conception, we could use XML in acceptance tests to say, this node is supposed to have this value, this node is supposed to have this value. We use CSS, but if you remember, we said we could also use XPath in codeception acceptance tests. So XPath expressions are quite useful. And in your case, there's a hint. If you look at the assignment 5, there's a hint. Use XPath, because that will make your assignment programming much easier. If you just say, okay, these are nodes I want, and then you make the XPath query, and then you just process the nodes. And even another hint is, if you are to find how much they skied every year, you can do that in XPath. You don't have to get all the nodes and do the summing yourself. Just leave it to XPath to sum up how much they skied for a year. So use XPath. It's a nice tool when you make programs, develop programs using DOM and XML. But then we need to kind of understand XPath or the XML structure. And this is overlapping with the DOM. As I said, the document object model is an API for accessing XML documents, XML content. And we'll talk about the DOM next week. But the DOM and XPath, they share this view of what constitutes an XML document. How is it or how is it structured? What are the building blocks and how are they related? So we'll start this week, and then we get more details next week when we talk about DOM, look more into the data structure, detailed data structure. But what's important here is to recognize that inside an XML document, we have seven different types of nodes. We have the root node, the very top of the document. And the root node has one element. We said it has one, the root of the tree is one element. So it's one child, which is the root element. And the element may contain other elements. And again, elements and elements and elements. We have nodes for attributes, because we need to store attribute values as well. So inside the XPath and DOM, we consider attribute nodes as a special type of nodes. We have nodes for text. We have nodes for namespace. We have nodes for processing instruction. And again, what is a processing instruction? That's what we do when you have PHP script. Anything inside less than ?PHP is a processing instruction. What would the XML parser do with it? Nothing. Just send it to the PHP processor, because it's a processing instruction. So it's the processor that would run the instructions. And then comments. If we add comments to our text, it will appear as a comment. Okay. So now, what is a location path? It starts simple, but I can promise you, since there are always XPath questions in the exam, I can tell you that this is not so simple when you start getting into all the combining all of this. But the first thing to think of is a file system hierarchy. You all have a file system that you are used to, a hierarchical file system. So you do cd /something. So it's not all drag and drop, I hope. You know what the file system hierarchy is? And let's see if I have, I guess I don't. Let's see if we... if you have the command prompt, so we could do cd this seed like that. You go, you change directory. And this is a path. So if I do this, let's see. Now, this is the path. Under the C root. So here we have, what's the root here? Well, the root is C. And the root has many children. Among one is users, Yelsvoll. And then you is a child there. So it's the exact same as a file system path in the beginning. Then it gets a bit trickier when we get into the, to some of the other details. So you're familiar with absolute and relative paths? Is there someone who doesn't know the difference between an absolute and relative path? You don't know the difference. So, okay, what is the absolute? Absolute means that it will start from the very top of the root, of the tree, and go down. This one would start from wherever you are. So if I go back to this here, so if I go one up, if I do cd oblique 6, it can't find it, because there is, so if I do look at what's under my root, top of the tree, you can find there is an Intel, there is a perf log, program files, temp users, but there is no oblique 6. So when I do this one, it's an absolute. So I say, you have to start from the beginning, from the very top, from the root, look for a directory called oblique 6, but oblique 6 doesn't exist. But if I do this, it's relative. Then I say, are there any children of my current directory that has oblique 6? Yes, it does. There was one. So in this one, oops, the other one, I was trying to This is a full path. This is an absolute path. It says, from the root, there should be an oblique 6 directory, which is not. That's why this one failed. And I can, if I do the go up again, I can also, and that's sometimes convenient, say, okay, I can go in the current directory and look for a child. So this means the dot says, okay, this is the current directory. I want to go to the current directory and a child called oblique 6, which will then bring me down again. So so it is possible to, and this is useful in XPath. We're going to come to why this way of addressing, starting with your current directory and going down, why this is useful. We'll come back to that, probably not today. And we can have wildcards, as we can do in here. I can do list all the files. Oops, sorry, I'm on Windows. You can list everything, and the same thing with XPath. This will say, give me any element. I don't care if it's element B or C. I want any element. What is different to a file system? If you think about file system directories, we can have only one file and one directory of a name. But if you remember in XML, the A node may have multiple Bs. And each B may have multiple Cs. So this path here is returning a group of elements. All the C elements that happen to be a child of a B element that happens to be a child of A. Because on a file system, file names and directory names have to be unique. In XML, there is no such restriction. You can have inside a document, you can have many paragraphs. You can't only have one of each inside the document. So it's a bit different in that when we talk about the path here, we would typically mean a set of nodes, a list of nodes, not just the one node. And that is something to remember when we have an XPath expression and we know that it's going to return one node. We have to remember that what we get is a list of one node. We always get the list back. We never get the one single node. We'll come back to that again. And you're going to make some errors. So in this case, we have a list of nodes, not individual nodes as we do in the file system. And we do have a lot more than what we do have on a regular file system. For instance, we do have descendants. What does descendant mean? It means that it exists somewhere in the tree. I don't know where, but somewhere in the tree underneath where I'm at, there will be some nodes. We'll come back to that. And we can test for find special types of nodes. We could be interested in just text nodes or just commands or just processing instructions. And also, as I said, we have even especially advanced or the enumerated ones, we have many accesses. And access we can access. Access, okay. I'll talk about access in a little while. Again, remember, we do have a node list. What is important is that the nodes in the list will always be sorted. We'll come back to what is the order, but typically they will be sorted in the order they appear in the tree. You have been doing tree traversals. So if you go for a pre-order traversal, you can think of it that way, then it will go through the nodes the same way. It will visit the nodes in the order in which they appear in the tree. That would be the typical. But then we have some operations that go backwards, and they would sort the nodes in the opposite direction. But when you get the result, you will get them in a well-defined sorted order. They don't just happen to come. So that's why it's a list, but it is a kind of special list in that there will never be duplicates. So if there, you could say that if your path expression will be such that you can reach the same node in different parts. So let's say you have an OR, you have an XPath that has, it should be either this or that. If one node satisfies both requirements, it won't appear twice. So a node will only appear once, independently of which part of the XPath expression it satisfies. Then we talk about steps. So now we have looked at the path, how the path is from parent, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. This is the path. Then we have something called a node test. That would say, do we want a special element or special or do we want some text? What do we want? And then it may contain predicates. We may be only interested in the skiers having a certain name or the skiers who actually ski the season or something like that. So we can put a predicate on the elements of the path as well. This is what we're going to be working on in more detail. So typically, what this looks like is that we have a path. In this case, somewhere in my document, there is a food element, and the food element has a name, and that name, the dot here means that that name contains the text chicken. So that is kind of how the XPath looks like. We have the path, meaning sequence of nodes. We have a node test. In this case, it will be the food, that it should have exactly a food element and a name element. And we do have a predicate. The predicate here is that the name of the food should contain the word chicken. What is important is what will this return? And that's number one. So I've been I'm trying to be quite clear in the questions, both in the assignment and on the exam, what you should return. So the first thing to do is to say, what are we looking for? And what we're looking for here would be names. What is the final? Because what you look for is the end. What to say? The end node in the path. Which is the end node here? It's the name, because this is a predicate. It just says something about what the name should be like. It's a name. So what we will return in this case would be a list of names in which there is chicken in the name. We'll look at the details pretty quickly. But let's first see how we can do this in a browser, because that's a question. The question is, would the name be chicken or would it contain? If I wanted to test for the name being exactly chicken, I would say dot equals to, meaning that the name should be equal to. In this case, it says contains, and contains, we'll talk a little bit about the XPath functions, and contains is an XPath function that's just testing for whether this appears within the name somewhere. So since we have this contains function here, it will test for it. But if you want to test if it's exactly chicken, then we could just say dot equals to. So this is kind of like the like operator, if you want, in SQL. So in SQL, if you ask whether a name column, whether the name is chicken, then we could say name equals to. Or in the other case, we could say name like dollar chicken dollar. Then we could test for it has chicken somewhere in the name. So it's similar to the SQL-like operation, this one. So how to do this in the browser? All browsers that I'm aware of, they have developer tools, and developer tools come with a magic X function. You remember we had the $$ function for doing CSS lookups. If you wanted to find nodes, a CSS selector, we could use $$ and then write in the node that you're looking for. And kind of a similar to XPath, in that we say, okay, we're looking for the book one or the element having book one as ID, or we're looking for the table, the third row of the table and the fourth cell. You remember we had all these queries in the CSS lookup, and then we used the $$ function. Now we could do a similar thing with XPath queries in $X. So $X would be the function. So we can search for the root by doing this, and we can search for and if we want that node, we can get the first element in that node or in the set. Because remember, even if it's just one node, it's going to be in a result set. So let's see. I do have. So if you go to the nutrition router. This is the one that we were looking for. So make it a bit bigger. So if you go here to the more tools, developer tools, we could just go for the console and see where we are at. Now, this is the document. So if I want to go, X, it's undefined. So if you want to find the root. Now, this is a bit tricky when it comes to Chrome, and the different browsers are a bit different. In Firefox, it used to be different. I don't know what's these days, but if you use Firebug in Firefox, it got a bit different, because we would think that the root here is the nutrition, because that's kind of the root. It would be the nutrition would be the first element, but now it's document. And the reason for that is that Chrome is attaching the XML document to its internal DOM structure. So inside the document, you have a body. So if you try to, if you execute this one, then we can open this document. And we find that this document, this is everything that the DOM would give you. So we talk about that later on. But if you just find the child nodes, we can look at children. Let's see, children. Children. So it has an HTML collection. And it has an HTML node. And if you look at the children has a head and a body. So if you look at the body, let's see, the body has some children, which is a lot of things that Chrome added to the document. So unfortunately, Chrome is not so not so easy, or doesn't give us the obvious answers when we look for the root. So what we can do is then to rather look for what we consider to be the root. So somewhere, remember, we'll talk about this tomorrow in detail, what this means, but slash slash means a descendant. And let's say we would like to find a nutrition root. Nutrition. Now we have the nutrition document. And we find that nutrition document, it has, what are the children of or the child nodes of nutrition? If you draw the tree, you find that it looks here like the first child is a daily values, but as you can see here, it first has some text because it's a new line up here. We have a new line and some indentation for daily values. So first it has text, daily values, text, and then there's a food element, a food element, a food element, a food element. If you look here, you find daily values, you find food, 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 food. So if we go to the, if we go to our query, so what we were looking for is nutrition, food, name. These are all the names now. And we would like to put a predicate on that one. And now we need double quotes, probably. So what was the contains? What were they looking for? Contains. And the current node, which is now the name, should contain... chicken. And we see that there's only one. So the browser will continuously update the result list. You can see that here. So now it has only one. So if we run this query and we open, we find the name. We find that the text is chicken pot pie. So we did look for chicken in the name. So if we had tried, as you were asking, if we had tried to say not using contains, but using equals, you can see there is nothing. But if we knew that we have a chicken pot pie, then we see that it's there again. Now we have a full test for the whole name. So we'll stop there, and we'll continue tomorrow, go more systematically through how we put this together. But these are the tools. We're going to use the browser for testing our XPath queries, and we're going to compose different types of queries of different complexity to try to understand the dimensions.